All right, good afternoon. Welcome to this evidentiary hearing on the proposed Alamitos Energy Center. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce the committee and then ask the parties to identify themselves for the record. I'm Commissioner Karen Douglas, the presiding member of the committee assigned by the Energy Commission to oversee these proceedings. To my left is Commissioner Janaea Scott, the associate member of the committee. When he sits back down, that's Ken Shelley, the hearing officer. And Commissioner Scott's advisors, Reta De Mesa to her left, and Matt Caldwell to the left of Reta De Mesa. My advisor, LaQuinn Nguyen, is to my right, and also Christy Chu, the technical advisor on siting for the commissioners. At this point, I'll ask the parties to please introduce themselves and their representatives, beginning with the applicant.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Commissioner. I'm Stephen O'Kane. I'm vice president of AES Alamitos Energy, the applicant. And I'll introduce themselves.
Jeff Harris, Harris, on behalf of the applicant.
Jerry Salamis, Swarm Hill, on behalf of the applicant.
Ben Stone, project manager for the Energy Commission on the Alamitos Energy Center project.
Jared Babula, staff counsel.
Michael Lewis, deputy director.
Thank you. And the intervener, Los Cerritos Wetlands Land Trust.
Hello, April Rose Summer, filling in for the trust.
Bill Powers, Powers Engineering, expert for the trust.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Public advisor is here, Alana Matthews. Could you just stand up? Other representatives of state, local, federal, tribal government agencies?
Good morning. Patrick O'Donnell, State Assembly, the 70th Assembly District, which takes in certainly the city of Long Beach, Signal Hill, Catalina Island, and goes into San Pedro, which is actually in the city of Los Angeles. I just want to thank you for your presence here in Long Beach State for sure, and thank you for serving your state as well all the time, and probably your dime that you have to give up, but isn't always acknowledged, so thank you for your service. And I just want to kind of, I'll just kind of keep it short, and I'll just go into 2 points. Number one is, well, really three. Number one is that I support the project before you today. It's a good project. I think it will benefit California, certainly this region as well. Listen, it's going to bring, we're going to have advanced technology there. It's going to lead to a greener environment for a variety of reasons. The batteries alone are going to be something historic, something out of the norm, something other communities can learn from. And now, you know, I know I'm pretty familiar with that plant having grown up in its shadow. It takes about 24 hours to fire up that plant now. And that's not good for our grid, and that's not good for our environment. So I think the new technology on the battery side, absolutely, but also on the plant side, that on-demand component, will be beneficial to our region and really California's energy grid, which I see as an elected official as being very vulnerable. So again, I'm very supportive of the project. I know some have some concerns about it. People I respect have some concerns about it. They've spoken, well, it's natural gas. Just, that's the technology we have today. Maybe in another 25 years, we'll be at a point where we can solely rely on wind and the sun. We're just not there from a technology standpoint today. So again, I support the project very much. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Thanks for being here. We also have a card from Susie Price with the Long Beach City Council, 3rd District.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for being here in Long Beach. I echo the comments of Assemblyman O'Donnell, and thank you for your service and for taking the time to be here to listen to us today. I represent the district where AES's plant is located. I've been very involved with the company even prior to being sworn into office in terms of receiving briefings on this project. The team at AES has been incredibly helpful in terms of meeting with me at my request multiple times to answer questions that I personally had or those that came from my constituents. I've followed the progress of this project very closely. I've had the opportunity to attend multiple community meetings wherein there's been a presentation from AES on this project. I know that they have conducted dozens of community meetings as well as individual briefings with my office and our staff at the Development Services Department in the city of Long Beach. I have a monthly briefing with the Development Services Department and the director. And because of my role as a member of the Los Cerritos Wetlands Authority, I've asked numerous questions over the last several years when we've talked about this item, and the AES project is something that's a reoccurring item on our monthly briefings. I've talked about some of the concerns that I've had and those that I've heard from my community regarding impact on the environment, the immediate environment, the wetlands, and based on the information that I've been provided and the research that I've conducted, I feel very comfortable supporting this project in light of the evidence and the information that our Development Services Department has provided me with. I support the project for many reasons. In addition to the reasons that Assemblyman O'Donnell mentioned, I do also favor that this is going to have a smaller footprint in our community, which is very important to a lot of the residents that live in the area. And I do also appreciate AES's partnership in terms of aesthetic enhancements along the corridor where the plant is located. That's a major concern to the community who may not have the subject matter expertise in terms of AES's operations, but they're more concerned about the overriding issues in terms of what they will see and experience as they go to and from their homes. So I appreciate the partnership. Most importantly, though, I appreciate that AES has availed itself to city staff and myself, and at any given time, they are very responsive with answering our questions and alleviating the concerns that we have in terms of what we personally believe or what we've heard from our constituents. That line of communication has always been open, and perhaps that is the best part of this project, is that we're able to talk through some of the issues and some of the updates together and have a good understanding as we share the project with the community. So I thank you again for being here. My office and I are available to answer any questions that you may have after today. And again, I appreciate you taking the time to share these issues.
Thank you for being here as well. I'll ask one more time for elected officials or staff from state, local, federal, tribal government entities in the room or on the phone, if you'd like to identify yourselves for the record, phone or WebEx. All right, with that, I'll turn the conduct of this hearing to Ken Shelley, the hearing officer.
Thank you, Commissioner Douglas. Can you all hear me okay? Everyone's nodding yes. Thank you. Good afternoon. Before we begin, I had a request from the public advisor, Alana Matthews, asked the committee to reopen the Los Cerritos Wetlands Land Trust motion to stay proceedings for the limited purpose of allowing 3 minutes for Rob Simpson to make a public comment on the motion. I don't see Mr. Simpson here today, but he could be on the phone. So I wonder if you could unmute everybody on the phone, and let's see if Rob Simpson's on the phone. Rob Simpson, are you on the phone? Mr. Simpson? Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do, Ms. Matthews and Ms. Summer. Whenever we can connect with Mr. Simpson, we'll take that in that comment later. So we will make that available. Okay, so the committee noticed today's evidentiary hearing. In the notice of pre-hearing conference and evidentiary hearing that we issued on October 14, 2016, the evidentiary hearing is an administrative adjudicatory proceeding to receive evidence into the formal evidentiary record from the parties. Only the parties, and the parties are the applicant, staff, and intervener Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust, only the parties may present evidence for introduction into the formal evidentiary record, which is the only evidence upon which the commission may base its decision under law. Technical rules of evidence may be relied upon as guidance. However, any relevant non-cumulative evidence may be admitted if it is the sort of evidence upon which responsible persons are accustomed to rely in the conduct of serious affairs. Testimony offered by the party shall be under oath. Each party has the right to present witnesses, introduce exhibits, and to rebut evidence of another party. Questions of relevance will be decided by the committee. Hearsay evidence may be used to supplement or explain other evidence, but shall not be sufficient in itself to support a finding. The committee will rule on motions and objections. The committee may take official notice of matters within the Energy Commission's field of competence and of any fact that may be judicially noticed under the California courts. The hearing record of this proceeding includes sworn testimony of the party's witnesses, the reporter's transcript of the evidentiary hearing, the exhibits received into evidence, any matters officially noticed, and the comments submitted by members of the public. The committee's decision will be based solely on the record of competent evidence in order to determine whether the project complies with applicable law. Members of the public who are not parties are welcome and invited to observe these proceedings today, and you can do so either in person or on WebEx, which is our teleconferencing program that we're using. This will also be an opportunity for the public to provide comment after the record is closed and at about 3 p.m. today. So depending upon the number of persons who wish to speak, the committee may have to limit the time allowed for each speaker. This public comment period is intended to provide an opportunity for persons who attend the hearing to address the committee about the project. It is not an opportunity to present supplemental written, recorded, or documentary materials. However, such materials may be docketed and submitted to the Energy Commission for inclusion in the administrative record. Members of the public may submit written comments if they would prefer to submit written comments rather than speaking directly to the committee. Members of the public who wish to speak should fill out a blue card, looks like this, provided by the public advisor who is sitting in the back of the room. And if you would prefer not to speak publicly, but would like to submit a written comment, the blue card has a space to do that. So that's how we know. These blue cards are our way of knowing that you're here and that you'd like to make a comment. Exhibits, actually, you know what, I better do that now because then I want you to do exhibits and witnesses. Okay, so this is on the phone. Okay, Tonya Martin, are you here? Okay, Tonya Martin, please, we're going to give you like 3 minutes if you wouldn't mind at the podium. Please speak directly into that. I'm not even sure if that mic is on.
I think it's on.
Oh, that's good. Okay, great. Go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Tonya Martin. I'm the representative for Senator Ricardo Lara, 33rd District here in the state of California. The Senator asked me to come today to speak in favor of this project. He's an advocate for the environment, as you know, and the Alamitos Energy Center is an important and reliable source of clean electricity in Southern California. AES is proposing a modernization of the plant to create a more efficient and appealing environmental friendly plant with the capacity to power over 1.5 million homes and businesses. The Senator feels that this project will move California into the near zero emissions that the governor is requesting and requiring. So we ask that you please consider this, and we thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for commenting. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, back to housekeeping and general explanation of how the day is going to go. So again, if you're here, can I just see a show of hands? How many people are members of the community or want to comment today that are here already? I've got like two of you. Okay, that's great. As more people come in, I'll remind people, but if you want to speak, we'll just need you to go to the public advisor table in the back and fill out a blue card. Now, as to the exhibits and witnesses, the exhibit list has been made available to the parties through the website, and the parties were asked to bring copies for their use today. There are copies of the exhibit list, if you want, back at the table, public advisor's table, and also a copy of today's notice. The witness list is evidentiary here.
There we go.
So let's keep exhibit list up first. At the pre-hearing conference, we explained to the parties that because of the way that our computer system works, we have to have a unique transaction number and a unique exhibit number. So as a result, the some of the numbers that were requested by Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust were changed to the numbers of the exhibits as they were assigned to the other parties who put that same exhibit in. That's really not a problem for the public so much, but the intervener is aware of it. The witness list is on the screen this time. We'll discuss the order of testimony next. As to taking testimony, as we explained in the hearing memo that was docketed on Thursday, November 10th, 2013, rather than taking time with the usual formal direct and cross-examination of individual witnesses, we will proceed by way of an informal hearing format. The committee will call all witnesses to testify as a panel on the topic at hand. Witnesses may only testify on topics or issues within their expertise. The testimony may include discussion among the panel without lawyers asking the question. The committee will ask questions of the panel, and if time permits, the committee may allow limited questioning of the panel by the parties' attorneys. The committee will establish limits as needed on the number of questions a party may ask and the amount of time and the line of questioning they may consume. The party with the burden of proof may provide final rebuttal testimony if the committee deems it necessary. The committee, in the interest of efficiently completing all topics at the evidentiary hearing, may curtail testimony or examination of a witness if it becomes cumulative, argumentative, or in any other way unproductive. The parties and witnesses are admonished to allow the witnesses to finish their answer and to not talk while another is speaking. And remember that the court reporter who is sitting right here cannot record two people speaking at the same time. So everybody needs to let everyone else finish their statements before speaking. And one of the things I'm trying to model for you all right now is what it looks like when you're properly using the microphone. Notice how the mic is about 3 inches from my nose, and I'm speaking directly right into it. If I turn my head like this, or turn my head like this, or look up or look down, you're not going to get it all. And this is important to us because we care about what you have to say, and it needs to get into the record, into the transcript. So please speak, shoot your voice right down into that microphone, and that's the way we will get all that information. So thank you for in advance for doing that. Today's hearing schedule. Right now, we're basically handling the housekeeping matters. We've received comments from Long Beach City Council and Assemblyman. I've just finished talking about some of the explanation of the procedures. And what the way we envision this is as soon as we are finished with the housekeeping, we will start taking evidence on undisputed evidence. This, we've already had a pre-hearing conference. The parties have established those areas that are undisputed and have stipulated that that testimony may come in written form only. So what we're going to do, just so you understand what's happening, is we're going to ask the parties whether they have a motion. The party's going to say, yes, we're moving exhibit 1 through 1,000 or whatever they're putting in today. And we are going to hear if there's any objection. And if there's no objection, we will receive that evidence into the record. This is a formal nicety that we go through in order to make sure that the record is clear what evidence is and is not in the record. We will do that for all three parties. So once we do that, then we will start taking the disputed topics. There are, in general, three disputed areas in this matter. The first one is alternatives, and Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust has one witness, Mr. Powers, who would like to speak. And so basically what the testimony would be limited to is basically rebuttal, since we've already received your direct testimony, and there has been rebuttal, I think, to your testimony. So it would be essentially sir rebuttal. And then we will do this as a panel, and I'll explain that in a minute. After we take evidence on alternatives, we're going to take evidence on the cumulative analysis of the demolition. Now, that is several witnesses requested by Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust, so we will call them as a panel. And I think many of those people will be testifying by way of telephone anyway. And finally, the committee had questions with regard to laws, ordinances, regulations, and standards that needed some fleshing out. And so we will take care of that essentially as a panel at the end of the day. As soon as we're finished taking the evidence, ladies and gentlemen, we will then take public comment. So if we finish, if we're able, let's say, to finish at 2 o'clock, we will take public comment at that time. Otherwise, if we are not able to finish and we have to keep going, we will break around 3 o'clock to take public comment, get all of the comments in, and then if need be, we will resume taking in the evidence. So that's essentially the way the day is going to go. Now, those times that I just gave you are approximate. Each topic may take more or less time than is allotted, but in any case, the topics will follow in the order above unless changed by the committee. So if there are no questions at this time, we would proceed through the uncontested topics and start with the applicant's motion to enter its evidence into the record. Before we begin, is there any question about the way the day is going to go, Mr. Harris? Just for clarification.
Oh, my mic's on. Maybe I haven't followed your advice, sorry. Just by way of clarification, at 3 o'clock, you will take comments at 3 o'clock even if we finish early today?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. I have no other questions.
Thank you. Staff, any questions about how we're going to proceed?
No questions.
Okay, and Ms. Summer? Let me just say, for the intervener, Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust, go ahead.
Yes, just the question as far as, as the committee is aware, that the trust pretty much begged the committee to reschedule it so that Joe Deaver, expert for the trust, was available, and that was not accommodated. So I'm not quite sure how things will go as far as questions that the attorneys will be able to ask, but I would request, since we have no representation on the panel for the cumulative impacts, that the trust be permitted to ask some questions on that, regardless of kind of what the plan is as far as the committee just asking questions so that they are able to be represented on that issue.
Certainly.
Let me just
in general, the way I envision it going, especially since you don't have any direct witnesses per se, would be to call those witnesses that were requested. I have that list in here, and I can call those out in a minute. There it is. It's being hidden by the telephone list. If we can scoot that out of the way of the table. There you go. Those are the witnesses that were requested by Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust. You see that, David Mitter, et cetera. Okay, good. So basically, what I think the way we would probably proceed is ask the witness what their conclusion was, what was the basis of their conclusion, and then give you an opportunity to cross-examine on that.
Okay, and we'll do that all in the panel format?
Probably, okay. Yeah. Many of these people will be on the phone. But you are aware that there was a ruling made that the demolition of units 1 through 6 of the AGS, the Alamitos Generating Station, were deemed not to be a reasonable consequence of the AEC, the Alamitos Energy Center. And so the question of demolition has been limited to cumulative analysis only.
I'm aware.
Okay, good. Great then. So, Mr. Harris, let's begin with you. Do you have a motion at this time?
I do. Yes, I'd like to move some of our exhibits in. These are the actual numbers from your memorandum of November 4th. So we have...
My request, by the way, for all the parties is to use the numbers that are in the exhibit lists and the modifications as made. I wonder if we can get that back up, Mr. Kramer, on the projector so people know which ones we had to modify. I'm sorry for the interruption. Go ahead, Mr. Harris.
No, clear record is very important. I appreciate it. We would like to move in three sets of exhibits. The first one is exhibits number 1401 through 1473 would be our first set. The second set would be exhibits number 1500 through 1502. And then our third set is 1503 to 1508.
there, as my recollection, if it serves me correctly, there were other exhibits, one through 1,000 around there. Did you have other exhibits you wanted to put in, or are you just not putting in those?
Would you like me to use the proponents' numbers as well for those? Yeah, the 1,001. So also proponents' exhibits 1,001 through 1,001, and then 1023 and also 1024. And then the superseded exhibits 1001 through 1074. Sorry, they're not superseded.
Okay, so let's be clear, because exhibit 1401 through 1473 used to be exhibits 1001 through 1072. I see. So those were all taken care of in those three. Okay.
Yeah, and just to be clear, you have up on the exhibit list, the proponent's exhibit numbers, and if I could speak English, I would have read all those numbers, and I think I did, so thank you.
So the motion is from the applicant to move into evidence exhibits 1401 through 1473, 1500 through 1502, and 1503 through 1508. Any objection from staff?
No objection.
Any objection from the intervener?
No objection.
Okay, those are received. Next, staff, do you have a motion?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to put into the record our 2000 and 2011, but then we're also wanting to add the two documents that we had filed post developing this list, which would be exhibit 2012, which was the Worker Safety 8 and Cultural 6 updated language, and then 2013, which would be the LORS table, which was filed yesterday, which was supplementing the LORS tables to reflect the guidance from the committee about clarifying some of the issues on the LORS. And so that the document covered cultural resources, traffic, transportation, bio, socio, soil and water, land use, and visual.
Okay, so essentially the motion is exhibit 2000 through 2013.
I also would like to note, though, that under our regulations 1212B1D, that the FSA and supplemental parts of the FSA are automatically in the hearing record.
Understood.
Okay.
But I appreciate you making them.
So I'll make the motion for all those numbers up until 2013.
Thank you. So the motion is to move into receipt of evidence 2000 through 2013. Any objection, interveners?
No objection.
Any objection from the applicant?
No objection.
Those exhibits will be received. Now, as to...
Shelley, if I could for a second, just in case I butchered the record, I want to make sure that we did include exhibits. I'll move in exhibits 1001 through 1022 and 1025 through 1073.
I'm sorry, can you speak directly into your mic?
1001 through 1022, and then also 1025 through 1073.
1025 through 1073.
Correct.
Okay, the motion is exhibits 1001 through 1022, and exhibit 1025 through 1073. Any objection from staff?
No objection.
Any objection from intervener?
No objection.
Those, if I can make one more motion, I tend to make their hearing. I'd also like to move in.
Those exhibits are received. Go ahead.
Thank you for that. I'd also like to move in any of the numbers that were left off the exhibit list that's currently on the Energy Commission's website today. I don't believe there's anything missing, but I'd like to make sure that we are moving in that entire list for all parties, applicant, staff, and intervener.
That is sort of a vague motion, so what I'll do is I'll basically acknowledge for the record that the understanding is that all of the original exhibits offered were intended to be moved into evidence, and if inadvertently, due to the change in the exhibit list numbers, one or two got dropped out, we would deem those moved in. Okay? Lastly, I wanted to say that at the pre-hearing conference, Ms. Summer, the applicant staff stipulated to the admission of all of the exhibits proffered at the time
by Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust. And so the exhibits, which are exhibits 3,000, or make that 3,001 through 3,047, are received into evidence by way of stipulation.
Thank you. Just one thing I've noticed on here is that, and this may be because it was filed after this list was put together, the trust motion to stay proceedings I'm not seeing on this on this list. So I, if it works at this point, I could move that that be 3048.
Any objection from the applicant for to receive Exhibit 3048, which was the motion to stay proceeding?
I don't have the docket number in front of me, but no objections.
Staff, any objection?
No objection.
Exhibit 3, so Exhibit 3000 through 3048 will be received into evidence.
Great, thank you.
But you need to, we need a TN number, Ms. Summers, so that needs to be.
Do you want that down?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind.
Just one moment. That should be TN 214345.
214345. Thank you very much. Okay, so then let's move on now to, is there any other matter that's undisputed and needs to come in? Anything in further motions at this time? Hearing none, then let's get to alternatives. Now, in this, under this topic of alternatives, the intervener requested that they be able to call Bill Powers as essentially in on direct examination, but since we've already received all of his testimony and rebuttal testimony, and we will deem that all direct examination for our purposes today. The Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust requested that David Vitiver or Stephen Kerr be present for cross-examination on the question of alternatives. Staff, or who's here for staff on that today?
Everybody's calling in.
Okay, great.
But both those staff experts will be available.
Okay, so the first thing we're going to need to do is unmute David Vitiver and Stephen Kerr. And applicant, did you have any witness that you wanted on this panel?
Yeah, we'd like to have our alternative witnesses available if need be, and that's Mr. O'Kane to my left and Mr. Salome to Ms. Neumeyer's right.
Okay, then at this time, I'm going to ask Mr. Salome and Mr. O'Kane and Mr. Powers to please rise. Do you solemnly swear to or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and penalty of perjury pursuant to the laws of the state of California, Mr. Salome?
Yes, I do.
Mr. O'Kane?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Powers?
I do.
Thank you. You may be seated. And then staff's witnesses are only Mr. Vitiver and Mr. Kerr. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And Mr. Vitiver, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Kerr, can you hear me also?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I need you both to stand, please. Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury pursuant to the laws of the state of California, Mr. Vitiver?
I do.
Mr. Kerr?
I do.
Thank you. You may be seated. Okay. Then at this time, my list here. Okay. Then, Mr. Powers, I think the way I'd like to proceed is if you could state your position based upon not only your direct testimony, which we've already received, but you've now received some rebuttal testimony to it. So if you could sort of sum up for us your position on alternatives, then we can proceed from there.
Thank you. I think to expedite this, I'll just
briefly summarize the introduction to my testimony and provide a little perspective on my response to the rebuttal from staff. The FSA errs by analyzing alternatives in isolation, determining that energy efficiency, demand response, or battery storage are not adequate substitutes in the proposed project.
I'm just going to ask you, you're talking off to the side like this. We need you to speak directly into that mic. So maybe if you can move the computer so it's easier for you to speak into the mic so we get all of that information. Go ahead.
I'm ready.
Much better. Thank you.
In fact, let me start again. I'm halfway through that first sentence. That way we'll get the whole thing.
Yeah.
The FSA errs by analyzing alternatives in isolation, determining that energy efficiency, demand response, or battery storage are not adequate substitutes for the proposed project by themselves, and errs for failing to acknowledge the alternative of contracting for existing reliable combined cycle capacity to serve the LA Basin. So I want to interject that the staff in rebuttal does refer often to the PUC's long-term procurement proceeding, where in fact the alternatives were analyzed as a group, not in isolation. The FSA correctly identifies that state energy policies include a loading order for electric generation that prefers and maximizes cost-effective, reliable, and feasible energy efficiency, demand response programs, and measures of renewable generation to supplant the need for new fossil fire generation. And that California Public Utilities Code addresses requirements for an electrical corporation's proposed procurement plan, including the requirement to first meet its unmet resource needs to all available energy efficiency and demand reduction resources that are cost-effective, reliable, and feasible. Yet, the FSA sidesteps California law by failing to combine preferred resources, specifically demand response and battery storage, and utilize existing combined cycle capacity that will otherwise be mothballed to fulfill the project objectives at less cost and environmental impact than would be incurred if the proposed AEC project is built. One quick question, just a couple of more sentences, is there is no air quality section for us to review here, but there is an air quality PSA. I just want to point out that given this is a big issue in the PUC proceeding, which I was in as an expert, the PSA indicates that this project will emit more than 2 million tons a year of greenhouse gases. In 2014, all of the steam boiler plants in the LA Basin emitted less than 1 million tons of CO2. So this is a big deal, and I presume we'll get to it at the next round.
Thank you. I should have mentioned that for the people in the room, just to be clear, if you'll allow me just this moment. Ladies and gentlemen, this hearing, evidentiary hearing that we're having today is evidentiary hearing part one. This is on all subject areas having to do with the Alamitos Energy Center, except air quality and public health, which are dependent upon what's called an FDOC, which is the final determination of compliance from the South Coast Air Quality Management District, which they have not yet published. And so we are waiting on that. In order to make it efficient use of state resources and time, the parties agreed that we would go forward and we would bifurcate the issue, meaning basically we split the hearings between all of the topics we're going to hear today and air quality at a subsequent time. I suspect that's going to be within about a month or a month and a half that we'll be back here and handling part two. So this is part one. So I'm sorry for the interruption, Mr. Powers. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Turning to a couple of the alternatives that I cover in opening testimony and that were addressed in staff rebuttal, it's undisputed that there is going to be 800 to 1,000 megawatts of additional demand response added in the LA Basin over the next 6 or 8 years. The issue was the 20-minute response time in the PUC proceeding and whether that met ISO and SCE requirements. Staff points out that it was adjudicated in the PUC proceeding that 20 minutes was a reasonable standard, but that is really not the point. The point I'm making in my testimony is that a simple administrative change might make that 800 to 1,000 megawatts of DR available as a reliability resource. The issue in the PUC proceeding was that SCE issued a request for offers for DR. It did not include a 20-minute response requirement. It got offers from DR providers. It didn't anticipate there was a 20-minute DR requirement. And then ex post facto imposed a 20-minute response requirement and did not let the DR vendors refresh their bids. It sounds ridiculous when you hear me say it this way, but that is what happened in the LTPP process. And so the reason that I indicate that this could be a simple administrative fix, which was even anticipated in the PUC proceeding, is that, of course, if you were to change a substantive requirement in a bidding process, you would let the bidders refresh their bids to address whether or not they could do that. That never happened in the PUC proceeding. The final comment I have is on the recommendation to utilize soon-to-be mothballed combined cycle capacity from the La Paloma 965-megawatt combined cycle plant in Kern County, which sits on the main north-south transmission trunk line serving the LA Basin. Instead of building a new combined cycle and simple cycle capacity at Alamitos Energy Center, staff comes back to say that, well, it's not in the LA Basin, so it can't be considered a reliable local resource. And I just want to point out to staff, did make an issue of this in my testimony, but Exhibit 2 to my testimony is a FERC order fining the ISO $200,000 in 2012 for failing to meet the N-1 requirement in the San Diego service territory. What happened that night is ISO was attempting to dispatch a combined cycle unit located in the country of Mexico, 100 miles from San Diego, outside of San Diego's service territory, to meet a local capacity need in San Diego. And before staff dismisses La Paloma as an alternative, two things. The transmission lines that are down during the 1 in 10 event for reliability purposes are south of LA Basin. They are not the main trunk line that La Paloma sits on. And two, the ISO is already dispatching units that are outside the geographic defines of local reliability areas, not just in other service territories, but in other countries to meet that need. So this is very much in play. It is not definitive in any way that La Paloma could not be used to meet LA Basin reliability need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Powers. Now, Mr. Babula, who do you want to address these issues for staff?
I think maybe Mr. Vitiver would be, they're on a panel, so I think it crossed over on a couple of where their expertise are. I think a lot of the PUC-related stuff would be Mr. Vitiver.
Okay, then let's hear from Mr. Vitiver. If you're on the phone, please respond to Mr. Powers' statement.
Okay, this is Mr. Vitiver.
Okay, now, excuse me, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute because you're not sounding very clear to us. Are you on a headset or something other than a handset on a telephone?
No, I'm on a Darth Vader set with a spider.
Oh, the spider.
Am I coming through?
Well, you know, you sound very muddled, and we're not going to get, we really need to hear clearly what you have to say, and I'm looking over the court reporter to see if you can, if you're getting good audio over where you're sitting. Could you understand him? She's saying she can hear you, so is there any step that you could take on your end, Mr. Vitiver, that might give us better audio here in Long Beach?
I don't think so. I'm 6 inches away from a microphone.
Oh, that's good right there. We actually have an in-room audio person who just fixed the problem. So, okay, go ahead. You have the floor, Mr. Vitiver.
Okay, well, there really was no question of me, so I'm not sure I've jotted down notes on Mr. Powers' comments, and let's see what we come up with here. I'll address the issue of La Paloma first. I'd rather naively perhaps expect that if the La Paloma Generation Center could provide the local reliability services to the Western LA Basin, that the ISO would have assigned it what's called an effectiveness factor, which indicates the impact of a small change in output from La Paloma on reducing overloads on transmission lines into the West LA Basin. As a local capacity resource, the Alameda Center basically provides capacity within a defined geographic. In the event that
there are... You just cut us up a little bit. Could you start your sentence again?
I'll try.
One minute. Mr. Vitterer, could you hold on for one second? Go ahead. I don't know if you heard that, Mr. Vitterer, and anyone else who's in that room, but if you are not wearing headsets and you are listening to the WebEx along with your spider phone, then we're going to have audio problems. So we either need you to, we need someone to either get on the phone, pick up the handset, and deal directly, or we need you to turn the sound down so that it won't come across the spider phone.
Okay.
I think that the spider phone was a bad idea. I think that what we need to do in the future is have all of our witnesses call in on their landlines or cell phones.
Right.
We need individual
instructions. That you could use a spider phone, so I didn't know what format they were using.
Okay.
Okay, we've unplugged a bunch of things. Is this any better?
Yes, that's much better. I just need to speak directly into the microphone and continue on. Sorry for the interruption.
All right. Well, I need to sort of lay out why local. Yes.
Now you're still breaking up again. You need to speak directly into that microphone at the spider phone.
Officer Kelly, I need license here.
The other option might be to have him, do you think we should have him call in on his own phone? Mr. Vitterer, I'm going to ask that you call into the WebEx on your own telephone so that we can hear you, because the spider phone doesn't seem to be working at all.
Okay, it's
going to
take me about 30 seconds to call in information. And turn to my. So, good job.
We didn't get anything of what you just said because it's completely breaking up. So, I hope you can hear me better than I can hear you, and I hope you can hear that I'm asking that you get on a cell phone or direct line and call it. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Give him a chance to get on the phone.
Matt, you can hear me. This is Mark Hesters. He is going to his office to call on his phone.
Thank you, Mr. Hesters. We could hear that.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to ask Mr. Kerr as well as Mr. Vitiver to get on their own telephone. If you're going to be on your phone in the same room as that spider, we need you to mute the spider phone. Just in case anybody's wondering, the spider phone is one of those three-legged things that sits in the middle of a conference room and everybody speaks into it. It's not a real spider.
I do have a question, a little bit on procedure. So I kind of understood that,
you know,
their attorney would be able to ask.
I wasn't quite sure of this
because you sort of have an open-ended format, which sort of surprised us, where you just said, well, respond to what you heard.
Well, let me just say, Mr. Babula, that we did say we would use an informal hearing procedure at the pre-hearing conference. I don't want to create much testimony or a lot of words on the record right now because we're in the middle of taking testimony. We have witnesses that are under oath, and I just want to get them into the record. So what I'm basically doing is allowing the witnesses to take a stab at taking positions. Mr. Powers talked about, with regard to alternatives, he talked about the efficiency, he talked about demand response, he talked about battery storage. This is all in his testimony. We've already, you know, seen this testimony before. So we expect Mr. Vitiver and Mr. Kerr to address points that he's raised, and we're going to turn it over to the applicant. So this is in answer to your question. We're going to let them respond to those areas, and I'm going to turn it over to the applicant and let his witnesses speak up if they need to, and then we'll let Ms. Summer ask any questions that she has, and I'll go around the table one more time, and then we'll be done with the testimony. So that's the way we intend to proceed. If Mr. Vitiver, Mr. Kerr, if you're on the line right now, speak up and let us know that you're here.
This is Mr. Vitiver. Can you hear me?
Very, very. It's great. We can hear you fine now. Thank you for doing that.
Okay, well, I'm in a phone booth down at the corner, so let's make this quick.
Don't forget that you're under oath, Mr. Vitiver. And Stephen Kerr, are you on the phone yet?
I'm here with Mr. Vitiver.
Okay, great. So, again, we're sorry for the interruption. Mr. Vitiver, you have the floor. Mr. Powers had talked about efficiency. He talked about demand response. He talked about battery storage, and you were in the middle of talking about La Paloma. So take it away, Mr. Vitiver.
Okay, well, let me talk about La Paloma at first, and to make this conversation more intelligible, I'm going to give a brief overview of the local reliability process. In areas like the Western LA Basin, there's a lot of electricity demand, and meeting that demand requires both local generation in the basin and the import of generation from outside the basin over a pretty well-defined set of transmission lines. Now, because Los Angeles is so densely populated, there are a limited number of power plants in the basin, and there are a limited number of transmission lines. And under very high load conditions, let's say in the middle of the afternoon in August, when temperatures are at an annual high, say 100 degrees or more and along the coast, the demand for electricity in the Los Angeles Basin is so high that it cannot be met entirely with generation in the basin. It requires the import of electricity over a set of transmission lines. Now, a problem exists if there are what are called contingencies. The ISO is required by NERC to be able to maintain reliable electric service in the event of a sequential failure of two major components of the system. Think of a large generation project or a large transmission line, two of each, two transmission lines might fail 90 minutes apart, two large generators might fail 90 minutes apart, or a generator and a transmission line might fail 90 minutes apart. And if the ISO has to be able to maintain reliable service on the hottest day of
transmission lines, effectively importing as much power into the Los Angeles basin as possible. And then it turns on enough local generation to meet demand. And it then goes through and assesses all pairwise possible contingencies, the failure of every pair of possible pair of generators and transmission lines. And it hunts for the, in each case, it models the failure of, let's say, a generator and a transmission line, and it looks at what local generation is needed to be up and operating to maintain reliable service under those circumstances. And then it goes through every possible combination of two generators, two transmission lines, one of each, and it hunts for the pair of failures that lead to the largest need for in-basin, in Los Angeles, generation. And when it finds that largest amount, it has determined what is called the local capacity requirement, or the LCR. And in its study, it concluded that sufficient local capacity was required to warrant the CPUC authorizing the amount of new capacity that it did in the long-term procurement proceeding. The Alameda Energy Center is designed to meet a share of this local capacity requirement. Now, I don't have the exact local capacity requirement values in front of me, but what the CPUC did was it said, let's make some assumptions about how much renewable generation is going to be built in the Los Angeles basin, how much demand response there's going to be, how much energy efficiency there's going to be. And the residual, what's left over, any shortage that is left over, will have to be met with natural gas. And this is how it came up with the authorization for Southern California Edison to procure the amount of new natural gas power generation that it did. And as I said, Alameda, as a result of the RFO process that Edison undertook to fulfill this local capacity requirement, Edison came up with Alameda in partial satisfaction of this requirement. Now, looking at La Paloma lies outside the transmission system defined local capacity area that is the Los Angeles basin. So as far as the ISO is concerned, La Paloma cannot contribute to meeting the local capacity requirement that the ISO has estimated and that the CPUC has, as a result, authorized the procurement of new gas-fired generation. Now, Mr. Powers is, I assume, correct when he says that if you look at the contingency, the transmission line or generation, pair of transmission line or generation outages that create the need for the most in-basin, in Los Angeles, local generation, that the transmission line that connects La Paloma to the West Basin is, I assume he's correct, that it's still open. But it's incorrect to assume from that La Paloma can therefore provide the local capacity that the system needs. It could be in the pair of contingencies that define the second largest amount of local generation that is needed, that the transmission line that connects La Paloma with the LA Basin is down. So the fact that if we had this one contingency, what's called an N-1-1, the failure of one component, and then 90 minutes later, the failure of a second component. The fact that the one contingency which leads to the local capacity requirement is one that does not result in a line that connects La Paloma to the basin going down, it could be that the contingency which requires the second largest amount of generation in the LA Basin is one in which the line does go down. So to say that La Paloma could contribute to local capacity simply because the contingency that is protected against is one in which the transmission line linking La Paloma to the basin is still open. It's simply incorrect. Now, I can't comment on Mr. Power's assertion that there are combined cycles in Baja California that are being used to meet local capacity needs in the San Diego area. I'm not familiar with that. It would require somebody from the ISO to explain, if not to the committee, at least to me, what's going on and how that can be explained. I've never heard of an instance where the ISO's operating procedures obviate the need for local capacity. So that's as much as I have to say on La Paloma. It would surprise me a lot if the ISO had just sort of overlooked the potential for taking an existing large facility and using that to satisfy a local capacity requirement. If the ISO could use La Paloma to obviate the need to build Alamitos, the energy center, or any other project that provides new gas-fired generation in the L.A. Basin, I think we'd all be very happy if that were possible. The place to assert that that's possible is in a forum, if not the LTPP proceeding at the PUC, then certainly the transmission planning process at the ISO or the stakeholder proceeding in which local capacity requirements are determined. That proceeding is held annually. So if indeed La Paloma can contribute to meeting local capacity requirements in the LA Basin, someone needs to raise that possibility to the ISO in their local capacity requirement proceeding. Now, Mr. Powers also referred to the possibility that other preferred resources, the collective term that denotes both demand response, energy efficiency, distributed and central station renewable generation, and increasingly energy storage, that he has noted that there are quantities of these resources that would obviate the need for gas-fired generation. And I just have two comments to make in response to that. One is that in determining the local capacity requirement, the California ISO takes as inputs CPUC assumptions about demand and about the potential for preferred resources to meet that demand and obviate the need for gas-fired generation. A very, very large part of the LTPP proceeding in 2012, which resulted in the authorization of a large amount of gas-fired generation in the Los Angeles Basin, a very large part of that proceeding was spent developing appropriate assumptions for the CPUC to require the ISO to use in its local capacity studies. The state has targets for peak demand response. I believe that's still at 5% of load. The state has targets for energy efficiency savings, including additional and available energy efficiency, or what is known as what used to be known as uncommitted energy efficiency. Energy efficiency that we know is out there. We haven't necessarily studied it. We certainly haven't financed it. We may not have programs for it, but we know it's out there, and it has to be, we assume that it could be reasonably expected to occur in the future. So we take the demand forecast and we deduct from that all the energy. We meet demand response. We assume that there will be renewable energy developed in the LA Basin. Some of that will be solar energy.
hearing advisor Ken Kelly.
Mr. Kelly?
Yeah, we were just having a little bit of an audio. I need you to kind of go back about a half a paragraph and
okay, and
restate that. You sound okay now. Is that okay, Michael? I'm getting the okay. Audio is good from the court reporter as well.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Okay. So can the court reporter go back on that sentence that he has?
It was just the last sentence she said.
Wholesale, you're speaking about, this is Keith Winston, you're speaking about wholesale electricity.
Okay. So the TPUC requires the California ISO to use specific assumptions about the development of alternative resources, alternatives to gas-fired generation in the Los Angeles Basin. And these include energy efficiency savings, demand response, peak demand response savings, the development of both distributed and wholesale renewable projects in the LA Basin. So all of these are assumed to occur in the LA Basin before the CPUC says, go forth and procure something that looks like the Alameda Energy Center. So we can point to anecdotal resources which pop up and make themselves available. But in the planning context, these resources have already been assumed to be developed. It has already been assumed that these resources will be developed. Now, Mr. Powers raises the notion of 800 megawatts of demand response being available. I can't tell you exactly how much demand response was assumed to be developed in the LA Basin when the amount of gas-fired generation capacity that would be needed was being estimated. I will wager that it probably wasn't 800 megawatts. But I will also note that this issue was raised in the proceeding which considered Southern California Edison's application for the recovery of costs associated with the contract with the Alameda's Energy Center. And this particular issue was raised and was it bluntly rejected as a reason to not allow cost recovery under the contract. So, in a nutshell, the planning process is such that large amounts of preferred resources are assumed to be developed over the planning horizon before the need for resources like the Alameda Energy Center are estimated. So that would be one response to Mr. Powers' comments. If you'll give me a second to collect my thoughts and look over my notes, let me see what else I can come up with.
Go ahead, take your time. My notes show that you said something about having two comments, and maybe that just was two comments.
No, that was one long comment, and now I'm looking for. I think I can. I'm done for the moment, anyway.
Okay. And so the other question I have for you before I move on is, are you including efficiency and demand response as preferred resources?
Yes. Efficiency, demand response, renewable generation, and increasingly energy storage is included in that list. When the preferred resources were initially defined about 10 years ago, storage was not considered to be a resource at the time that was feasible and cost effective. But as all parties to this proceeding know, it's now considered to be a preferred resource.
Okay, so we're considering the battery storage in those comments.
Yes, the CPUC has in authorizing specific amounts of
gas fire generation in the Los Angeles Basin not only took into consideration the development of energy efficiency and demand response and renewable generation, it also established minimum levels of procurement for storage resources. The total amount of capacity that Edison could procure in the LA Basin was divided among preferred storage, other preferred resources, and gas-fired generation. So the CPUC has considered that energy storage.
Thank you. So did you need another minute to collect your thoughts?
No, I'm looking over my notes, and I can't see what I was thinking about. So.
Okay. Then do I need to ask Mr. Kerr, or was Mr. Vitiver speaking for all for both?
I think that was adequate. I think Mr. Kerr's would have a different area if the questions arose regarding what he would talk about, which so wasn't the LTTP and the ISO stuff.
Okay, thank you. Then let's turn it over to applicant. Did you have any a witness that you wanted to have speak to this?
No, we wanted to make our witnesses available for questions from the committee. We're prepared to brief these issues on the factual record. So.
Okay. Then we're back to Los Rios Wetlands Land Trust, who opened this up, so we'll hear from the intervener.
May I make a couple of observations related to what Mr. Vadiver just said?
Yes. Just keep speaking right into that mic, please.
You bet. One, Mr. Vadiver relies heavily on the PUC's long-term procurement proceeding and the outcomes of that proceeding. One outcome was 640 megawatts of combined cycle capacity at Alamitos. It wasn't 1,040 megawatts of an additional 400 megawatts of simple cycle generation. It was 640 megawatts of gas-fired generation. That is currently leaving the fact that it's contested aside. That's a big difference between what the California Energy Commission is looking at approving. To the, in my opening testimony, I talked about 800 megawatts of demand response available. I think AF looked at 997 megawatts of demand response, both numbers from the long-term procurement proceeding. And nearly 1,000 megawatt combined cycle unit in La Paloma. Part of my thinking in that opening testimony was the demand response to a unit on that peak 1 in 10 year reliability day to shed the same types of services that would be provided by these turbines. Ancillary services, spinning reserve, cut down reliability requirements. And La Paloma is available to provide bulk power. Combined megawatts. It's not that La Paloma and 800 to 1,000 megawatts DR are necessary to offset disposal. These are just tools that are available in combination to meet the need. And finally, Mr. Vadiver indicates that he's unaware, doesn't have any information on the ISO dispatching combined cycle units in Baja California to meet local capacity requirements in SDG&E territory. I would just recommend that he read Exhibit 2 of my opening testimony, which is the FERC order that on page 2 and 3 describes how ISO is dispatching the La Rosita combined cycle unit in Mexicali to meet the ISO's 25% local capacity requirement and just drop the ball. The unit wasn't available, it was in forced outage, and it precipitated an unnecessary major outage in San Diego that night. That's all.
Thank you. Anything further from staff?
Well, I would caution against equating a 25% minimum generation requirement with operational requirement with a local capacity requirement that is not an operational target, it's a planning target. The notion that there are minimum amounts of generation capacity that must be
spinning in certain areas is qualitatively different than the development of generation capacity to meet a particular planning, a planning requirement of so many megawatts in the West LA Basin, for example. So I have not read the exhibit submitted by Mr. Powers, but I would simply reiterate that if La Paloma could meet the West LA Basin local capacity requirement, that the ISO would have included La Paloma in the list of resources that can contribute to meeting a local capacity requirement. And in that, it didn't. That La Paloma effectively can't contribute to local capacity in the LA Basin, and that other new generation capacity is necessary, as indicated by both the ISO and the PUC.
Thank you, Mr. Vitiver. Anything further from applicant?
No, once again, we'll rely on our records. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Powers.
Thank you. I just want to point out what may be an inconsistency in the ISO's treatment of local capacity resources. In the case of San Diego, that night, the turbine in Mexicali was being called to replace a combined cycle unit in the city of San Diego, or right on the edge of it, which is the Otay Mesa combined cycle unit. That unit was being used seamlessly and interchangeably with combined cycle units right in the core of San Diego Gas and Electric Service territory. Two, the fact that the ISO did not include La Paloma on a list of local capacity resources in 2014, when the LTPP process ended, that included ultimately, it was subsequently followed by an application by SCE for the Alamitos Energy Center, didn't predict or anticipate that the 965 megawatt La Paloma combined cycle unit would be imminently about to be mothballed in the summer of 2016. It could not. But I would say that this is really just an example of inconsistent treatment by the ISO of local capacity resources, or at least potential local capacity resources. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the committee's heard enough on alternatives, unless there's anything further from any of the parties at this time. Staff?
No, I think that the record is pretty robust now, and we're beginning to sound like a PC hearing here. Maybe we can focus back in on the facility.
Okay. Your mic just sort of died. Watch, make sure this is still on. Mr. Harris? Anything further?
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Summer?
I do have a few questions. First, and forgive me, this is a bit of a long, a lengthy question, so bear with me. But following up on a comment that the witness made regarding Alamitos partially filling the LTPP LCR need. So in the FSA, the first project objective, and this is Exhibit 2000, page 14, reads, develop a project capable of providing energy, generating capacity, and ancillary electrical services to satisfy Los Angeles Basin local reliability area requirements. And we've just heard that, some lengthy testimony regarding LCR need. In its arguments that no other alternatives will meet project objectives, staff cites only to the earlier LTTP decision, not the actual decision on this plan, which of course was D-1511-041, where the CPUC approved 648 megawatt plant at Alamitos to fill LCR need, 400 megawatts less than the applicant has applied for here. In its rebuttal testimony, which would be Exhibit 2004, page 3, staff states,
that, quote, second-guessing the conclusions and findings of the CPUC after it has gone through the multi-year LTPP process is not appropriate, and commission staff is not in a position to reopen the LTPP proceeding, nor is the siting process the appropriate place to consider regional demand forecasting and grid reliability. Has not the staff done precisely this in dismissing alternatives based upon a 1,040-megawatt plant, acting contrary to the CPUC's approval of only 640 megawatts for Alamitos to partially fill the LCR need in the LA Basin?
I think, if I may, suggest that your question is more on the order of argument, which is the kind of thing that we would want to see in a brief. One of the things that we talked about at the pre-hearing conference is a briefing schedule, and basically what we said was that the briefs are optional. The parties do not have to file briefs, notwithstanding my personal preference for briefs. And what I would say, though, is that I think you're making a point that is argument that would land in a brief rather than getting an answer from staff. I mean,
but I think if you would, I would like to hear from staff on, you know, what their justification and their process is for dismissing alternatives based on a plant size that was not approved by the PUC. And we've just had a lengthy discussion about LCR need and you know, kind of the roles. And these are decisions that staff has made. So I would like to hear an answer if that's
okay. Mr. Vitiver, are you still on the phone? Did you get a question?
I'm going to leave this answer to Mr. Kerr, if that's all right.
Yes, please. Go ahead, Mr. Kerr.
Hi, this is Stephen Kerr. We did provide a response to a similar comment of this nature on page 23 of the alternative section. And basically, to summarize, for starters, the agency is required to identify a reasonable range of alternatives that lessen the project's significant impact. Because AEC did not have to mitigate its significant impacts, no particular alternative was necessary. But staff looked at alternate sites, technologies, and the no project alternative. PRO's project is already a smaller project than what was originally proposed in the AEC's first AEC, and is smaller than the existing AGS facility. Basically, my point is that our alternative analysis isn't driven by what contract they may or may not have. It's by the impact that this particular project, which is proposed, may have.
Is that the complete answer?
I think so.
So let's say the applicant hypothetically had applied for a 4,040-megawatt plant. Would staff have dismissed alternatives based upon the inability to meet 4,040 megawatts?
It would depend on staff's analysis and the impact that would be associated with the proposed project.
So you're talking about in your rebuttal testimony, I believe what you're referring to is a statement made in the FSA, page 622, that under the Public Resources Code, staff assumes the proposed project is needed if an FAC was filed. How does staff justify such a position when it's contrary to the orders of the PUC?
We have a separate process from the PUC. Our alternative analysis is based on what contract you may or may not have.
So, regarding the you did not look at. You state in the, this is again the FSA, page 5.34, biomass, hydroelectrical, geothermal, wind, and solar technologies were ruled out due to the lack of adequate space on the project site and or the unavailability of these energy resources in the project area. Yet staff did not rule out natural gas facilities on these bases, instead analyzing a non-existing gas plant at another site. So what was the reasoning to so act against Prefer Resources and to not take that position regarding other natural gas facilities?
We didn't carry forward another natural gas alternative.
You didn't analyze a project on the Songs, the Songs land?
Well, we're just bringing our work there that we considered early on was possible, because it takes a long time to develop alternative sites. That's something we looked at early on, and that was the most reasonable site that presented itself.
But you didn't.
Sorry, I'm getting some feedback here. There were no significant impacts identified for the project. And so alternative sites were carried forward, and also that site was not available once we looked into it further. So it was not carried forward anymore.
But again, the question is, you looked at alternate facilities and alternate locations for natural gas plants, but not for Preferred Resources, correct?
Mr. Kerr, did you get that question?
No, that's correct.
Could you ask it again, Ms. Summer?
In her statement, we looked at other sites for Preferred Resources. We looked at other proposed to possibly go.
And just to confirm, you also did not analyze any alternatives that included portfolio of Preferred Resources?
Correct.
Is there any explanation that you can offer for why there were no alternatives that included portfolios?
Well, before I answer, this is Jay. I just want to ask the committee. I mean, he kind of has already explained and stated that there was staff found there were no impacts, so they had a limited need for doing alternatives. He talked about the alternatives we talked about.
Right.
I'm not sure how much more you need.
We're just going to, how many more questions do you have, Ms. Summer? I think she's kind of coming.
I have just a few.
Yeah, we'll just let her ask a few more questions and then we'll move on. So, I don't know about you all, but I just lost that whole string. So I think I need you to ask your question again one more time, Ms. Summer.
I'm not quite sure where it was. Give me. And what I mean by portfolio of Preferred Resources is my understanding, looking at the analysis that you've done, you would look at, say, filling an alternative would be all solar. Of course, there are, what portfolio would be, some solar, some demand response. So I was hoping to get some understanding on why this staff elected to not analyze any portfolio of Preferred Resources.
So can you address that, Mr. Kerr?
This is Mr. Vetiver. I'm sorry.
if I were sitting in the room, I would be looking at Mr. Babula at the moment. But let me go back and just say two things. One is that as I stated in my response to Mr. Power's comments, the need for local capacity, which is a need that the Alameda Energy Center is designed to meet, is based on the assumed development of large quantities of all preferred resources, including things like solar. That would be one comment. The second comment is that in order to be eligible to meet local capacity requirements, the CPUC and ISO have jointly determined that there was a need for natural gas-fired generation in the Los Angeles basin of a threshold amount, at least 1,000 megawatts. And that is a need that the Alameda Energy Center is designed to meet, or is intended to meet, and it is a need that solar generation, whether it's distributed or central station, cannot meet. As far as the ISO and CPUC are concerned, a threshold amount of gas-fired generation is needed in the Los Angeles basin, and no amount of preferred resources can contribute to that.
So then what need is the 400 megawatt discrepancy intended to meet?
This is up to Mr. Kerr and someone else to answer. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Kerr.
Could you repeat that question, please?
What need is the 400 megawatt discrepancy supposed to meet?
I'm not sure.
This might be more for the applicant, but I do want to remind people that we don't look specifically at need. Again, to back up as our experts have stated, we don't care about what their PPA is necessarily. We're looking at the project in front of us.
So just to be clear, is that an objection?
It's an informal discussion right now, but if we can make an objection to the question about the need, because that's not something that we're directly looking at.
Folks, let me just say that the witnesses are under oath. Although we're using an informal format, this is a formal hearing. And if the attorneys have an objection to a question, state the objection, because the attorneys are not part of this discussion.
Thank you. Go ahead. Be turned on. I object to the form of the question about discrepancy. I think it assumes facts are not in evidence. I don't know what kind of discrepancy she's referring to.
I would overrule that objection, because I think it's clear that what she stated earlier is that there was an RFO for 640 megawatts, and this is a project for 1,040 megawatts. And so I think...
So you can see there's a difference as opposed to discrepancy.
There's a difference, not necessarily a discrepancy. But I'm going to I would sustain the objection if staff were to characterize it as such, because need is not within the ambit of of this hearing. We don't do need. I mean, we leave that up to the market forces, and so need is irrelevant in our proceedings.
Is there an objection for me to respond to?
I'm objecting that question is about need, which is outside the scope of the Energy Commission.
And I would cite again to the project objective that reads, develop a project capable of satisfying Los Angeles Basin local reliability area requirements, which is exactly what my question is about.
It's not, though. Your question was about...
Well, allow me to rule on the objection. So I'm going to sustain the objection. And that was Ms. Summers' sort of offer of proof. And you, Mr. Harris, had a rebuttal to make?
I don't have a rebuttal, but I think I'm going to want my witnesses to speak to some of this. I didn't realize I was allowed to object, since it was informal. No, seriously, this is a very serious problem with this informal process. We have the burden of proof. It's not always clear that I can object there were questions about portfolios, for example, outside the scope of any testimony, and a legal question. So if we want to go back to that one, I'll be glad to object to that then. But this is a problem with your informal process.
All right. So be that as it may, did you... So I need to be clear. Are you making an objection, or did you want to respond to her request to refer to the difference between the 400 and the...
If I'm following, I think you sustained the objection, and I'm not going to ask you to revisit that.
I really don't want to go off on this tangent of need. That is something the CPUC determines. The Energy Commission basically is precluded by Public Resources Code from looking into need. So if you can take any further questions that you have and direct them around the question of need, Ms. Summer, that would be the way to go.
Give me just a moment, please.
And while she's collecting her thoughts, I just want to make it clear that, yes, absolutely, the attorneys have the right to object to questions. And please make those objections known.
Off the record.